My name is Sue Steinauer. I'm 57. Today's August 26th. I'm located in Oakland at the StoryCorps Griot booth, and I'm here with my mom to record her story, and I am looking forward to learning about much of what she experienced.
And here to share it with my daughter, Sue, am I, Joan Ruskin. I am 83. It is now August 26th. The location is also the Story Booth in Oakland, California. And the relationship to my partner is I am Sue's mom.
Mom has spent a lot of time this week preparing for this event. I was happy to learn that the Story Booth was going to be in Oakland. I know it had been in Grand Central Station in New York several years ago, and Mom had an appointment but was unable to keep it, so this seemed like a prime opportunity. I know if we were living in the East, Mom would be regarded as a national treasure. And the way in which age is viewed in our culture is a bit different, but I am hoping that this little window of opportunity will allow her to imbue some of us with her story and keep it for posterity. So take it away, Joan.
Very good. Or as Sarah would know, this is Joan speaking from Jonesville.
Exactly.
A worthy storyteller, be she fabulist or griot, chronicler or memoirist, must invite the listener to take a minute step or a major leap into the heretofore unknown. I invite you, dear listener, to walk with me around one of my three last homes. That is not the origin of the entire story, but to begin, it will do. Leave your coat. The day is fair. There, on the floor of the study, a sturdy container waits. An old-fashioned trunk of great size, preserving the precious contents within. A multitude of drawers and hollows secure the transfer of the material from Rockville Center, New York, 11570, to Oakland, California, 94609, a distance of some 3,000 miles. It awaits my selection. Pulling this little handle or raising that iron latch, an entry into a specific focus of recall. This drawer with a circular finger hole could release a litany of details, addresses and schools attended. That shallow drawer could surrender an assortment of theater playbills. Each pull or pressure of my finger might liberate a bit of my history, an exploration of becoming Joan. Browsing the trunk's contents, I assign each drawer as a receptacle of memory and connection. And there is the native theme, the narrative's theme, connection. At this time, those connections must be defined with particularity, the junctures at which each person entered my life. One became two became three, three became four, and the changes they wrought. My marriage to Bucky in 1943, the birth of Greg in 1946, the birth of his sister Sue in 1949. That is the timeline I will use as a guide, the interior and exterior of my journey. Bucky's amplitude was the igniting, unifying force. His strength of purpose and loving devotion were factors in recognizing the frugality of the absolute when applied to the human condition. Bucky, born in June, an emblem of the sun. The warmth of him capable of thawing most resistance. A Norman Thomas socialist, an Edward Debs politician, Bucky's nimble response to my undeveloped awareness of family's dynamics was a defining moment. His ease at home with his mom and pop, an elder sister, a younger brother, and a young niece swept me into their spontaneous rhythm. The Backner household was never closed. The kitchen, a vital hub of nourishment and exchange. The table was long to accommodate the regulars or wanderers who might find themselves welcome by entering that door at 1584 Bryant Avenue in the Bronx, walking down a long hallway to find comfort and shelter from a less hospitable world. If the table was set for 6 or 8, a quiet time, I'd add only 2 or 3 settings, or double that number if it was a poker or mahjong night. Loaves and fishes, a steady expansion to accommodate those who came to be welcomed at the Backner table. Clara forming cabbage rolls or stretching dough for strudel. Sam peeling one more potato or hacking a pineapple or grapefruit were hallmarks of the family's generosity, generosity to assuage the homesickness of many who came as immigrants. There was always room for one more. This was a family in its ability to make much of less. How fortunate I was to be absorbed into the atmosphere of true abundance. Hence, Bucky's ability to persist when I showed signs of resisting the ebullience, hungering for more seclusion, resistant to sharing what can never be depleted, a generous spirit. I would have to learn to bend if we were all to flourish. Greg's arrival on March 15, 1946, was the occasion for much joy, mazel tov, the first male grandchild ushered in with the expected rituals of circumcision, to which I was opposed. However, I could no more deny Pop that affirmation than I could deny a man with such a great heart the pleasure of guiding his grandson through his bar mitzvah. In the little shul in Far Rockaway, the ladies assembled in the balcony threw sweets down from above. A celebration followed at the Backners with all the delights made at home by Clara. Pickled herring, gefilte fish, noodle pudding, strudel, rugula. The hallmark of all such celebrations as it was for Greg's birth, a huge challah created and baked by Clara. Greg's temperament provided me with much latitude to grow into motherhood. Long naps and a sunny disposition warmed me to the new role, while slowly stretching my understanding of the rights and needs of infancy. Greg always relished anything on wheels. A blue tricycle was a precursor to a slim black Rolly and the ultimate series of VWs, so prized as a liberating engine. In 1949, the upper level of a double-decker bus offered a bird's-eye view of the New York landscape. Vehicles, large and small, buildings tall and buildings squat, inviting fleeting views of residents at work and play. Repair equipment hoisting workers above the street in hard hats, or beneath the ground under manhole covers erupting suddenly. A crane operating at a construction site. A cement mixer in the midst of traffic rotating the mixture for a new sidewalk. So, father and son scouted the New York scene before a lunch of chicken soup and matzo balls. Sated with sights and soup, time to check out what Mom was experiencing at Columbia Presbyterian Hospital. The realization of this tiny baby girl rounded the family out to four. Susan arrived at 1 p.m. on September 21st, 1949, in time for lunch, a pink birthday package for me of 7 pounds, 2 ounces. Sue's infancy was more of a challenge than I was prepared for. Her signals of distress, discomfort, and unhappiness were cause for my concern and unease. I was unable to make it better. Earlier in this narrative, I noted a trunk drawer containing objects of particular significance. Resting in cedar shavings, a gyroscope with a piece of butcher's cord, a faded, frayed typewriter ribbon from a Royal portable typewriter. These are my restorative tools, my own global positioning system. The gyroscope and the string were brought to me by my dad to demonstrate the Earth's rotation. The typewriter ribbon for my prized Royal portable, a gift from my dad for my 9th birthday, opening a doorway to the written word. These two are touchstones I've carried with me throughout the years. There remains a third item of weight and recent adaptation, a manual as a reminder, outlining the functions of a cardiac device that issues an alert or direct correction to the heart's faltering rhythms. Despite the rigors of the year and the energy required to submit to illness, it has been a year of great victory. Inordinate demands have been placed upon loved ones, and although lovingly met, the issue and surrender to it, I cannot make it better. This chronicle shall continue with focus upon my father, Gabriel, my grandchildren, David and Sarah, my son-in-law, Michael, my second love and husband, Herman David, and the numerous friends and mentors who also inhabit and invigorate my life, fanning the embers. Each of that singular society of vital friends and mentors resides as a constellation. For purposes of travel, I have condensed the memories to a distillation of essences, floral, herbal, or spice. This is all to be continued as the chronicle unfolds. It might be of interest now for either of my interrogators to ask me some questions which may not have been answered in the segue from one paragraph to another, or all that it has released in terms of, now I wonder why she did that. What does that mean? Never a very outspoken explicator of why I did what I did, but just listen. I think this might give Sue an opportunity to express some of her wonder at the vagaries of motherhood.
Well, I guess the first thing that comes to my mind is why you insisted on that damn candy-striped wool sweater when I told you it itched.
Because it was so beautiful. Yes. And it was part of the little gray jumper, yes, which had little red embroidery going across the jumper. And it did not itch.
Well, I was stupid enough to believe you when you told me that. It took me years to realize that, in fact, it did itch. And I had every right to not wear it.
You are correct. And you should have said, I won't wear it.
Oh, yes, that would have worked
Unfortunately,
well, I'm sure.
In that atmosphere.
That was not an option.
There were no options, no.
That's true.
What was. What is.
But on a more serious note, I guess.
Will you tell us about this sweater really fast?
Oh, the sweater. Oh.
It was a little wool.
You know, in those days, it was no synthetic blend. It was 100% wool. It was not cashmere.
True.
It was not soft. It was quite scratchy. I was quite thin. And I don't know, had I been less thin, if it would have itched less, but it did itch, and it was very cute, but it did itch very much. But on a more serious note, I think the question that I have, and it's not solely from your retelling your story, but just in terms of observation, the last year and the relocation, and move from New York, where you had lived for 82 years, when you were a child, I know, in many different homes, but as an adult, in really a small amount of residences, mm-hmm, probably two or three, mm-hmm, how you have been able to keep your sense of wonder and adventure during an extremely difficult time and transition.
That is an excellent question. And Sue has the ability to hone in on the gravamen of the issue, as it were, the issue itself. There must have been, in my early globaling positioning system, some kind of compass that enabled me to keep safe those parts of me that might, I sensed, be violated. As Sue mentioned, in my early life, my parents were divorced when I was two.
This was way before this was an acceptable solution for parents who did not get along.
Mm-hmm. Right, that was 1925.
There were pictures of you that I have that were taken in Vegas,
In Reno.
Reno. Very petulant, mm-hmm, and unhappy. Mm-hmm. Cute little girl who'd been taken there with your mom because you had to be there for about 6 weeks,
Correct.
You say?
Mm-hmm.
In order to get the divorce,
mm-hmm,
but continue with your early childhood there.
From that point, coming back from Reno with the divorce in hand, this was 1925, as Sue said, an era in which a divorced woman was really looked upon with great scorn.
How was a child of such a divorce viewed?
As an appendage of the mother.
Mm-hmm.
As I had
not
been.
Kindly.
Not kindly, no. No, I was an outsider. And because we, after moving back to New York with my mother, we lived with my grandparents and an uncle until my grandparents died in 1926 and 7, 1928, at which point I was ready for kindergarten. Grandparents had died. My mother and uncle, then unmarried, and I moved to the first apartment that we had had independently, and I started school. It was only then that I began to see my father, whom I will discuss in greater length because he deserves far more than a scant observation, most likely a good part of the staying power of my compass. Although he did, as I relate in the story before, give me a gyroscope to establish the rotation of the universe. Somehow the message was sent with such certainty from him that I would find my location. He was a very quiet man, not given to much illustration. We were really nomads from the time I was of school age, five.
You and your mom.
My mom and I. Until I was about 18, frequently living in three apartments within a year. It was a time of post-depression when there were bread lines. People were dispossessed, which we never were. But it certainly was a time in which one had to acclimate to leaving one set of walls in the morning and returning to another set in the evening. A time of great potential
disequilibrium.
Disequilibrium. Thank you. I suppose I decided early on that to survive this, I would have to go underground and not reveal anything, which I did for a very long time, until I met your dad.
But there was some other message that was sent, aside from the certainty that your dad's message was that you would find your center and prevail. Aside from going underground, there was some other ability that you were given or developed to persevere.
Yes, and the best way I can answer that question is that it was most likely part of the ornery child in me, in which I thought, you can't do this to me. You won't know who I am. And, of course, that meant that until I met Bucky,
you didn't know.
I really didn't know either. So a great mystery was yet to be revealed. And I continued learning throughout Dad's life and learning even in his death,
right,
and learning again when I was fortunate enough to be loved again and married again, that, as I said very early on, what could not be extracted from anyone was a genuine, generous heart and trust. I did feel that although I did not live with my dad and saw him only on a weekend or occasional weekends, his belief in me was so secure, even though I know his pain in not having an easy relationship with me, which only began 2 years before he died, when I was 16, must have given him much pain. However, he remained constant. He never forsook me. And it is my sorrow that we did not go on, that he died so soon, that many of my awarenesses did not develop until long after he died. Mm-hmm. I think that to disencumber myself of the closed-in qualities that helped me to survive in those early years was a great divestiture. It was taking off layer after layer of what had previously been necessary as a protective device, which unfortunately I felt overpowered my softer capacities, which you were very much in need of, and which would have benefited both of us had I been able to be that compliant, easy, non-itchy mother.
That's because you wouldn't let me have a hula hoop either.
That's true. It was so ugly.
You certainly had a very clear sense of what was okay and what was not. There was no vacillating there.
I think that the marvel of this is that Sue and I have shared many travails, many joys, but she is such a magnificent person that she has been able to rise beyond the irritations, which I'm sure have been many, because although unstated, I'm sure when I come into her kitchen now, which is her kitchen, and say not a word, I don't need to.
Exactly.
Because it is written on my forehead
and
as
etched
to...
etched in my brain.
Oh, you did it that way? I would have done it this way. I didn't say a word, though.
No, that is true. You did not.
Doesn't mean I stopped thinking.
No, I've often thought it would not be a bad thing if for a blip of a moment you could
stop thinking. That's true. But it is the nature of the beast, my dear.
I know.
And I think that the sense of watching Sue in her growing years, having met with great difficulties and pain, and seeing her for the last, since 1990, with a man who dearly loves her and cherishes and values her, whom she can boss around, has been a great balm to me, recognizing how emphatically necessary it is to have a playmate. How fortunate I was in Dad to have that playmate.
At the right time.
At the right time. His personality was the right one for me. He wooed me out of my closet. So much for being hidden. And the strength of my second marriage, which we don't have time to go into here, however, is also the story of a man who had the capacity to love with a fierceness and a devotion and a subtlety that allowed me, after having experienced Bucky's death 4 years earlier, to accede to marrying again. And I did go on to have, as you know, we had 8 very, very happy years until Herman died. So that when I look at the drama of history and of my history and what my experiences and choices have meant, not just to me, but to the people I love, it is a great illustration to me that one never knows where that little surprise is going to come from that will suddenly sweep you off the floor and give you a life force again, which is frequently flickering,
right,
as you painfully have been a participant in watching this. And I think that is one of the great pains of connection. To love is to be vulnerable. And that means open to all the good and also part of the wrenching pain of fading.
Well, you make it hard to follow some of your statements, and certainly your story was quite eloquent and well done. I applaud you. I don't think I have any more questions at this moment. But thank you for sharing it and for getting it down on paper and tape.
Well, for getting it down on paper and tape, I only have you, my dear, to thank, because Sue has the capacity to wear many hats sequentially or all at the same time. And in a very short time, I was always a great Luddite and believed that the yellow pad and pencil were quite enough for me. You know, Blake and the great authors of the past never had a computer. The computer was in their mind. Well, I could do without one, too. But after editing and re-editing many, many pieces of work in which an error appeared, and then I had to type the whole set all over again from the beginning, and to see Sue sit down with her magical finger just boop, push a little button and move the keyboard, and there it was. It was all done. It was all corrected and presented. And as much as I know this transition, as I had said, was harder for all of us than any of us anticipated, requiring much more strength and endurance, I thank you all, you and Michael and Sarah and David, for being there. It has made the difference.
I hope.
It has. I'll be here to nag you for a while.
I'm still not wearing that sweater.
I was going to ask you if you had any advice that you can think of I guess maybe people who are either, I guess, just discovering their identity, or just any advice that you've been thinking about recently in terms of thinking about your life history and lived history.
I think the time in which I grew up, as difficult as it was more difficult but yet simpler. There were fewer choices. The margins were very clear. I mean, this was where childhood began, and this is where it ended, and this is what your obligations were, and to whom you were obliged. It is now much more wonderful to be young, and much more frightening, I think. One is faced with so many choices, and as I sat down to review these few pages, and ruffling through my notebooks, and the dictionary, and the thesaurus, and so forth, and I thought, you're only evading it. Sit down and write it. It is in you. And if I can suggest to people who are listening, there is so much that is rich within the person, if they would just go into a quiet room and sit in a comfortable chair for a reasonable period of time to sort it out and have enough faith in themselves that no one can foretell the moment when a playmate or a partner will arrive to help you through the vagaries and disturbances of life, which certainly are very real. It is worth the effort. It truly is, because it is only then when you dare to confront yourself that you can relish the richness of what is around you without even moving beyond the house. It is there. It is in you. So that when I see the prodigious ability of young people today, many of whom can, I mean, I cannot play an instrument. I do not sing. I cannot dance. I gave up ice skating because I couldn't, etc., etc. But even back then, somehow, although it was rather inchoate, even at a very young age, I rather did know who I was. I could not have written a piece to identify that. But somewhere I knew there was a little spark of Joan, which would emerge. Yes, it took a long time, and much had to be undone before I could really join the race. But it did happen, and it can happen. Do you have any other questions that...
I think that was beautiful. I think that's...